My name is Vladimir Dutier. I'm a CBS News correspondent. And today I'm so excited to have as our guest former Navy SEAL Brandon Webb. While in the service, just to give you a little background on who Brandon is, besides the impressive resume of just being a Navy SEAL, Brandon completed 4 deployments to the Middle East. He is now the founder and CEO of the Hurricane Group, a global media business focused on military and outdoor entertainment. And Brandon is here to talk to me about his new book. It's called Mastering Fear, A Navy SEAL's Guide. Welcome.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me, Vladimir.
So, listen, one of the things that I loved about your book and what I find really interesting about it is it deals with the topic of fear and pain. And that's sort of a theme in the book, right? How to overcome those things.
Yeah, you know, the book was inspired by this friendship I had. I moved my company to New York City back in 2000. It's been 14, 15. And I'd met Kamal Ravikant. And Kamal is an amazing person. He runs a technology venture capital firm. He's a best-selling author. His brother started AngelList, which he's a partner in Silicon Valley. And, you know, people would look at us and think it was an odd match, you know, but we became really close friends. And I learned through this friendship with Kamal that he didn't know how to swim. He's 40 years old and he had this fear of the water. And over time, as we got closer, I said, finally, one day we're at Flatiron eating breakfast. And I said, look, Kamal, give me 1 week and let me try and teach you to swim. And he said, oh, I don't know, like I've hired Olympic swimmers, like no one's been able to kind of
really
teach
so
me.
He had done some stuff, right?
He had done the stuff, and when I was listening to him tell the story, they were trying to just throw him into a swim lesson. They weren't dealing with the fear that he had of the water. And I've, you know, like you, experienced a lot of fear and pain. You know, I can remember my dad telling me to leave home at 16. Home was a 47-foot sailboat in Papeete, Tahiti. Like, we were on this family sailing trip around the world, and I had grown up working on a scuba diving boat as a kid, had all this boating experience, had a chip on my shoulder, and learned a really good leadership lesson that day, too. We had this big argument and over seamanship, and the lesson I learned
and
about
leadership. And you were 16.
16, and I learned there can only be one captain on a boat, and that was my dad.
Yeah.
And he said, look, I think, son, it's time for you to leave home. And I'd finished my junior year early, and, you know, I packed my bag, and my mom's crying, my sister's crying, and I go ashore, and I look on the board, and there's a catamaran sailing to Hilo, Hawaii, and I jump on the boat, you know, wave goodbye to my parents, and cry myself to sleep for a week straight, scared to death, like, what the hell did I just do?
Right.
And so, you know, and then another quick fear story, I remember getting my first job on this dive boat, and just working for tips, taking the trash out. I was filling tanks, helping people off with their dive gear. One of the captains, Roger, certified me at a scuba dive. I had a handful of dives under my belt. And then we're out on this multi-day trip to one of the northernmost Channel Islands, San Miguel, which is the largest, I think one of the largest sea lion habitats off the coast of California. What eats sea lions, if anyone's watched Shark Week.
Sharks.
Great white shark.
Yeah.
So I get woken up at 2 a.m. as a 13-year-old kid. This like Irish Captain Mike wakes me up. He's like, Brandon, get your suit on. You're going to go dive down and get the anchor unstuck, because we had to move the boat into calmer water. The weather had picked up. And I was thinking, I was terrified. I'm thinking, it's 2 a.m. I just want to sleep. I don't want to leave this little bunk I'm in. And there's sharks down there. Like, you want me to do what?
Right.
The visibility I know is going to be terrible.
Yeah.
And I'm all alone. Like, this is crazy, but I did it. And
did you see a shark down there?
No, I remember we had a hot tub on the boat. I remember scooping the water in my wetsuit and kind of using it to get on. I was like, just like trying to like delay as much as possible. Walking up to the bow with my dive light, jumping off the bow, and I'm like, I'm swimming as fast as I can, 50 feet down, and it's dark. It's cold, and I got my light and my anchor chain in one hand, and I could see the bioluminescence of the sea lions whizzing by me, like, oh,
whoa,
who's this guy? And the chain was wrapped around this like truck size reef, and I swam the chain around, unstuck it, blasted the bubbles, surfaced, you know, we'd blast our take the regular out, blast bubbles, so they know that it's they can put the engine in neutral because you're surfacing. And it got over with, and I'm like, okay, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was. So I, you know, the story is, in, you know, leaving home and becoming a Navy SEAL, and I dealt with a lot of adversity and fear, but I realized at a young age, like, if you learn how to harness that fear, like, it can be a real gift. And so when I taught Kamal on Monday at the New York Athletic Club, I literally, I was like, okay, jump in the pool. He's like, no, I don't jump in pools. He used the ladder to get down and kind of like shuffled across
right.
the wall. I'm like, okay. And I knew he had this fear. I didn't know it was that bad. And then by Friday, I had him do a cannonball and dive 10 feet down and pick a ring off the bottom of the pool. So we went from that to Friday, and it's, I took baby steps. You know, you understand the whole crawl, walk,
sure.
run from the military. I started building his confidence, just putting his head face in the water, out of the water, face in the water, taught him some like Navy SEAL bobbing techniques right. to use your lungs as kind of flotation. And by Friday he was blown away. He said, no one's been able to do this. And you've changed my life. Like, you need to write about this. You need to write a book about killing fear. Like, you just, you know, it's life-changing. And I said, okay. And Kamal knows, he's an advisor in my media and e-commerce business. And he said, the next week I said, hey, I sold the book. I sold it to Bria, my editor at Penguin. She's like, I love the idea. And he's like, man, he's like, one thing I love about you is you just get stuff done. Like, he used another word, but
yeah. right.
But that was the inspiration behind the book. And then I did this podcast series called Power of Thought, and I told my producer Ian, I said, I just want to have people out there that are just like different people, because the one thing I learned from moving to New York City as a, you know, a Navy SEAL, you know, I had my media business and I was writing, the first couple of books I wrote were about my military experience. I felt the bias of being in the military in New York. Like, people, even when I applied for my first co-op, mm-hmm. like, I had to go before the co-op board and interview because they're like, I don't know this Brandon guy, if he's going to get along. And I'm like,
right.
this is crazy. But even that, like, going through that bias, I said, you know what? I want different people. I want different people on the show. I don't want to just have my SEAL buddies on here, my Ranger buddies. So I interviewed over the course of a year, like astronaut Scott Kelly. I had John King, Chung King Studios, who produced LL Cool J.
Right.
I had CJ Ramone, the bass player for the Ramones, who was actually a former Marine.
Yeah, nobody, a few people know that, right?
Yeah.
That he was, yeah.
And I had all these interesting people on the show. And when the idea came for the book, I said, you know what? I went back and looked at the show notes, and all these guys had dealt with fear. CJ Ramone told me the story that I talk about in Mastering Fear, when he decided to try out for the Ramones and he ended up getting the job. And the first live show he played, they were holding signs like F you, bring back Dee Dee. And he said it was a hostile crowd. Right. You know? and so his like fear dealing with that, like it backstage, like, can I do this? Can I go out on stage? And he was like, you know what? I realized that you just only get so many opportunities like this in life, and you've got to just do it.
So let me ask you this, Brandon, and it's one of the things that I'm always curious about when it comes to fear, which is there is the fear of starting a new job. There's the fear of going out on stage when you don't know what to expect. There's the fear of learning how to swim.
Yeah.
But there are also, I'm guessing, and I want your opinion on this or your thoughts on this, there are primordial fears that all humans have, whether they are of snakes, for example, and just use one example.
Yeah.
You talked about
heights.
Heights is another one where a lot of people, it's not whether you know, are tough or you're not tough. It's just all humans. In fact, when I
have a fear of heights.
Right. In fact, I was going to say, when I was in the Army, there was a special forces guy who was like, I'm totally afraid of heights. I'm like, dude, you jump out of planes like for a living. And he's like, yeah, because it's my job. And it's because I've got to do it. But yeah, if I look down, you think to yourself, why am I jumping out of a perfectly good airplane?
Yeah.
Right?
No, I mean,
but are there different categories of fear?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, it's a good point to bring up, because for sure there are different categories of fear. And people, we all have fear. That's one of the things I love about Mastering Fear is I put the people that I feature in the book, they're by all means very successful people with different backgrounds. And I wanted to show people that we all deal with fear. It doesn't matter if you're like my friend James Altucher is an extremely successful guy, was terrified of public speaking. Mm-hmm. Now he's doing stand-up on the Upper West Side. Like, it's crazy. Like, and so fear of heights, you know, my own story with that is I had a slight fear of heights. I ended up losing my friend Mike in a skydiving accident a month before I was scheduled to go to Fort Bragg to learn how to skydive with the Army. And all this stuff was going through my head. And, you know, like you just said about the guy, I just said, you know what? It's my job. I just got to do it. Mm. And just confront that fear. Now, you know, I think my fear of heights isn't like you can compare it to somebody else where it's a crippling fear. Maybe it's a much bigger issue mm-hmm. for them. The thing I try and do in the book, and I actually learned, you know, when I was in the military, I went through instructor school. I became a master training specialist. So I understand how to write curriculum and build a system. And when I looked at Mastering Fear, I'm like, okay, how do I put this into kind of like a system of steps where people can take any fear, to your point, large or small, that it could be fear of getting out of a relationship, fear of asking for a raise, fear of public speaking, a fear of heights, a fear of water, a fear of flying, but create this system where people could kind of put it, their fear into it. And maybe they don't need to go through the steps that I outlined in the book, but it's a system that they can use and help them overcome their fear. And I really get into visualization because when I was a sniper instructor and ended up taking over the program as course manager, we were at a point where we didn't have a great sniper program. We had an okay sniper program. We just weren't teaching well. And, mm-hmm. and so we decided to overhaul the entire program, to modernize it and teach better. We brought in all these amazing consultants from professional sports, Olympic gold medalists, their coaches. And one of the guys, Lanny Basham, who was a gold medalist, and he was an Army marksmanship unit guy. He had was a world champion, an AMU guy, went to the Olympics in Munich, and these Russian guys got in his head on the bus. They started heckling him. And he said, it was the first time I'd really experienced, you know, had somebody like chatter me up.
Yeah, psyched him out.
Psyched him out. And he's like, I shot terrible. And he won the silver. And he says, you know what people say when you tell them that you're in the Olympic team, they ask you, okay, what'd you do? Then he said, how did you do? And when you're a silver medalist, the first question after you tell them you won silver is, oh, who won gold? He said it was like this incredibly motivating thing. And this is in the early 70s. He goes to all the best sports psychologists and he says, you know, how do I be number one? And he said he went to the top guy and he's like, look, Lanny, I understand your situation. I'm gonna do a great job of getting you to a point where you're okay with being a silver medalist. And he's like, not a chance. Like, that's what I'm not about. So over the period of a year, he interviewed all the gold medalists and he found these like common traits and he built this mental management program that he used himself to win the Olympics. I think it was in Montreal was the next one in Canada. Shot gold, ran the program, and then that's his business today. So he was consulting with us at the sniper program and during the audit, he says, okay, how do you guys teach? And, you know, what's a typical day? And he's like, time out. He's like, you guys are pointing out all the mistakes. He's like, this isn't boot camp or Navy SEAL selection where there's a purpose behind negative input. He's like, you guys need to change from positive or from a negative feedback to positive feedback. And it's as simple as, you know, I'll put it in sporting terms. If you see a kid that's learning how to bat for the first time in Little League and you're going, hey, Timmy, you know, God, your elbow, your grip is all wrong. This is wrong. And God, you know, as he's walking up to the plate to hit the ball, whatever you do, don't strike out. I mean, you just like program that kid for complete disaster.
For failure.
And so we changed the way we taught our students. So we would normally we'd point out mistakes and just tell them all the mistakes. And they're soaking it up. They're soaking all this negative imprinting up. And we changed the way we taught to a more positive teaching style. We taught him to visualize, which I get into the book in Mastering Fear, like visualization techniques, especially if you have a really strong fear of something. You can put yourself, if you have a fear of flying, you can put yourself in that airplane, like walking down the ramp, and you can visualize that and kind of like use it as a tool to kind of slowly conquer the fear. Because when I saw what it did to these sniper students, we would fail 30% of these guys. And all of a sudden we passed everybody when we started teaching better and the course got harder. And so I took it into my own life and business as a dad with kids. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to kind of use my children as a test bed and with this whole mental management program. And I've have conversations with them and I say, look, you know, you need to realize that there are going to be people, your friends, family, teachers that will say stuff to you. They don't even know they're doing it, but they're going to be putting negative stuff, you know, in your head, and you need to learn how to like push it out and positive imprint, which is what I get into the book. And my daughter, who is 13 years old, and as a 12-year-old, taught her to roll my airplane upside down. Last year she emceed her eighth grade, like end of school event with like 100 of parents and students there, and like wrote a speech. And I was like, in eighth grade, I would have been terrified to do that.
Right. Well, it's sort of interesting too. I mean, like, you know, for example, when I spent 20 years in a completely different industry before I became a reporter, and then I just basically quit my job and I started as a 38-year-old intern.
What industry was it?
Finance.
Okay.
I spent 20 years in finance.
That's why you're dressed so well.
I just came off from the being on CBS this morning, but like, normally I'm dressed like you in jeans and a t-shirt. But I was a 38-year-old intern at CNN, and I remember the person who was hiring me said, you know, this is not going to be easy for you because your boss that we're going to assign to you is going to be like 27. And it says here, you know, you spent some time in the military, you traveled all over the world. I was a managing director. I was a managing director at the second largest investment firm in the world.
Yeah.
And here I was as an unpaid intern at CNN. And
that's
I was
a pretty radical departure, by the way.
Well, and I was, but you,
which
you,
is like if a lot of people, I think, would have a fear of leaving that job.
Right. I mean, I went from earning a decent salary to earning no salary. And I still had a mortgage and I was in grad school, so I had tuition. It wasn't like people thought I retired from Wall Street. I wasn't that. I was like, you know, really struggling.
Yeah.
And yet I was really interested in doing this. And so I was able, I thought to myself, well, as difficult and as challenging and as afraid of this change that I am, and also having like getting yelled at, I tell the young APs and PAs here that through all the stuff that I had lived through in my life, there was nothing scarier than being in a control room one day after having made a mistake in my first week on the job when I worked on Anderson Cooper's show and having this producer screaming at me. And I remember I said, you know, I felt a tear in my eye because I was like, oh my God, my life is over. And they were like, that moment, like after all the other stuff, I'm like, there's just something about that when you've given up your lifeline to take on something and you're going to get fired the first day, right? And yet I remember thinking to myself, like, this is, you got to take your, part of the fear. I think a lot of fear is driven by our ego. I'm not talking about the fear of heights or, you know, flying in an airplane or learning how to swim. I'm talking about the fear of like public speaking, about, you know, taking on a new job, about getting married, about, you know, all the things that make up our lives.
I belong to a YPO. It's this business group. Before I was in YPO, I was in an entrepreneur organization, New York chapter. I have a guy I know in that chapter who runs a family business. It's a very sexy business. He's miserable. He's an incredibly talented musician, like turned down contracts as a teenager. He can sing, can play multiple instruments. He plays in Washington Square Park with friends and like crowds gather around. He's really good. He won't leave. He's miserable and he won't leave the business.
That always astounds me.
Because of his ego.
The thing that randomly, like I remember saying to myself, you know, almost all of the fear that we have is tied to our feelings of insecurity and our inability to get beyond. I thought to myself, look, I've run a business. These are kids. They've never been away from, you know, the tri-state area, but
one stamp in their passport.
Exactly.
And it's Canada.
Right. Exactly. But I remember thinking to myself, this 27-year-old producer knows way more about television producing than I do. Yeah. I know a lot about other things, but I don't know anything about this. So in this world, I am like a newborn. I am like a baby. And it's okay to apply the same attitude that you had as a child when you were very interested in learning something from the lap or the knee of your dad or your mom or a teacher, to take that as a 38-year-old, as a 40-year-old, however old you are, and say, I'm willing to put myself back in the student mode. A lot of people think that they can't be students, and I mean students of life, and that's a fear too.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's like this inability to get beyond yourself.
Yeah, and I left the military in 2006, just burnt out. I had a great military experience. I was a search and rescue swimmer in helicopters and eventually applied for the SEAL training. Had great examples of leadership, terrible examples of leadership, mm-hmm. which actually you learn from those situations. Mm-hmm. And then left and had a young family. The marriage was in trouble. It's one of the reasons I decided to get out. And started a new venture. I was going to build this racetrack in Southern California and rent it to car clubs and the military and do driver training for police and fire and put all my money into it. I'd done pretty well investing in small apartments in San Diego. Had partners, raised almost $4 million. 3.5 years later, the housing market collapsed. A local environmental group sued the county over our project, and it just killed it. Like, it all went away overnight. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, my wife is like, look, this has been fun. You put me through hell, like with the SEAL stuff and going to Afghanistan with the birth of our son. We were in counseling, but the short version was she was like, I'm out of here. Right. And by the way, I'm taking the kids to my family's ranch in Northern California. So I'm in a house by myself, having to like explain to the neighbors what happened, why the kids aren't playing outside in the street, why I'm not going to coach Little League next year. Having those hard conversations, I just lost everything. I think I owed people money.
Right.
And I was like, this is a really low point. But I snapped out of it when I realized, okay, I need to focus on the positive here. Like, you know, the marriage is over, but we've both agreed to really work hard and have a good relationship with the kids, which today, I mean, I cooked 2 years ago. I remember I cooked Thanksgiving dinner for her and her new husband and all her whole family and all their, you know, she's had kids with their new husband. Like, they all came over to my place and I cooked dinner, so I have a great relationship. The kids know they're loved. On the failure side of the business, I said, this is a great learning experience. And I think too many people don't realize when they fail, they're gripped by the fear, and they don't realize like fear can be a motivator and a really powerful learning tool. You know, that fear and adrenaline sometimes, you know, you probably experience it during going on the air for the first time or public speaking. Mm-hmm. And you realize that kind of you're using that to elevate your game to the next level. So I started looking at all the positives. Like, I'd just gotten basically an MBA in business, mm-hmm. like raising capital, financial statements, partnership, you know, legal docs, like the whole process. And I said, I'm going to be all right. And then I'm like, okay, I need to get a job. I got recruited for L3. Division of L3, they put me the whole training program, probably similar to your Wall Street story.
For sure.
Next thing you know, I'm a director at L3. I'm making more money than I've ever made in my life.
All right.
And
you basically, you were using that those trials and that tribulation to propel you into something else. So the question, I guess, for a lot of people who are going to be listening to this is, give me 3 or 4 things that somebody listening to this can do right away to overcome their fear of something.
Sure. So, you know, I'm big on mantra. And, you know, I have my mantra written out. In fact, I'll pull it up right now as we speak. I like a mantra because it's a place, I read it as part of my morning routine. I read it to myself. Because it kind of reinforces the person I want to be and brings me to center. And even when I'm like, I think of like, sometimes, you know, human beings are emotional. And the emotions are almost like the surface of the sea or the ocean. And sometimes it's calm and everything's cool. Next thing you know, it's storming. And if you've ever dove or been underwater, like getting below the surface is that kind of calm centering. And that's what I think about it when I'm my mantra. Sometimes I need to pull out of that, you know, angry surface and get go deep and get calm again. And I love a mantra, and I think and it's something we used in the in our mental management program that we got from my friend Lanny Basham, the gold medalist, was you can use, sometimes it's a temporary thing. You could paste a sticky note to your bathroom mirror that says, you know, I'm this kind of person, or I'm going to get over this, and kind of like that reinforcement. But I love a mantra because it's just, it's that positive imprinting. And I'll read my own mantra right now. Pull it up. So my mantra is, I'm building a billion-dollar company. I'm always learning and improving. Always learning and improving. I smile a lot. I love my kids, friends, and family, and they love me. I'm a great writer and New York Times bestselling author. I always look for the best in people. I treat others like I want to be treated. I anticipate instead of react. I wish happiness and express gratitude because I know it brings happiness in return. I have the knowledge to start any business I want and be successful. And that's my, that's kind of my mantra, that it's kind of like the person I want to be. And it just reminds me of the person that I want to be. And, you know, I remember the first time I had put out my memoir and it did pretty well. It was before, like, you know, I get all my army buddies give me a hard time. Like, oh, really? Like, Navy SEAL guide to cooking now?
Right.
What next? When I first kind of put myself out there, you know, you get a lot of guys were envious. They were still serving. And some of them had so big social media accounts and they're kind of like attacking you. And you know, and it's hard to deal with. I mean, you've dealt with the haters before, and I had to kind of learn how to deal with it.
Love my haters. Yeah. I learned that from a kid today. This week, we had a little kid on our show who was a little league baseball player. He was asked, you know, what do you do with people who say, you know, you shouldn't even be here? And he said, I love my haters. And I remember Gail King and I said to ourselves that's going to be our, I mean,
that's good.
From the mouth of babes, right?
Yeah.
We, you know,
like, well, they live in that world now, right? Like the kids are on social media.
Yeah.
They're so connected globally. So they're dealing with that kind of thing way more than we had to as kids.
The mantra is, and it can be something like that's pretty, I mean, it's really, I feel like your mantra encompasses all that you want to be and do in your life. But a simple mantra too, like, you know, if, for example, if people don't like to fly, you know, statistically speaking, you know, planes fall out of the sky exactly, you know, 0.1% of the time, right? And that can get you through a difficult flight or something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, to your point, I mean, I break it down in the book. It's like, first thing is to recognize what's holding you back. And I talk about knowing what matters too, because I think people go through life. I'm surprised at how many adults go through life and they haven't really figured out what matters for them in life. And that is personally, professionally, their family. And when you know what matters, like in some cases, let's say like flying could, a fear of flying could definitely in today's day and age get in the way of a lot of things, like visiting family, career. So once you like figure out what matters to you, then it becomes really apparent, like the obstacles that are standing in your way. And that's whether that be, you know, negative people in your life, or your fear, right? And so once you do that, then you recognize what that fear is that's holding you back. And that's a big part of like just acknowledging that. Like, I have a lot of respect and admiration for a guy like Kamal and his situation where, you know, he's incredibly well known in the health and wellness space. He writes the largest subscription crypto newsletter in the US. To admit to me that, yeah, he's like, I'm scared of water, man. You know, and that takes a lot of guts. So, and that's part of the process of identifying the fear, admitting it. And then I talk about using rehearsal or visualization to kind of, you know, if it's flying, it's like you're walking down that ramp and you do it over and over and over, because you know, like once you confront the fear, it's always never as bad as what we've made it up.
That's true. That's a good point. That's a good lesson. It's never as bad as we think it's going to be. Are you, before we wrap this up, is there anything that you're afraid of?
Yeah. I mean, I did a show last night on the Wharton Business Channel, and they get Mike, one of the professors, asked me at the end. He's like, what are a couple of your biggest fears? One of my biggest fears is that I'm going to die young and not, I'm going to leave my kids hanging and not kind of impart all the knowledge that I really want to put into them so they're successful, happy adults, leading, happy, successful lives, like following their own path. So that's a big fear of mine. I was always in the back of my head. Mm. The other thing is, I run a business today with our media and e-commerce. We've got almost 100 employees. A lot of them are veterans. A lot of them have families. This kind of marketplace we live in today where, a business can be a $1 billion company one day, like a Blockbuster, mm-hmm. and with the snap of the fingers, it's out of business. Like, this marketplace changes so rapidly.
Yeah.
I have a fear that I'm going to miss something as a CEO and let my team down, and the business will collapse, and I'll have to, deal. I'll be fine, but I'm worried about the families and the employees and the amazing team that I built. Like, that's a big fear of mine.
It's funny because some of those things that you're talking about now, when people say to you, look, you were in Afghanistan, you jumped out of airplanes, you dive at night, those things for a lot of people are already fearful. And one of the things that I think anybody who's served in the military, but even people who haven't, understand is part of the way you overcome some of those fears is because you trust in your equipment, you trust in your team, you trust in your training. You are a highly trained warrior. And so in your mind, you assume everything that I've been taught is for this specific moment. And I can't possibly fail because they've told me everything that could go right and everything that could possibly go wrong. Now, you said you anticipate instead of react, because if something does go wrong, you're prepared for that too. It's the same in your business.
And I recognize these two fears that I just told you, I recognize them as a positive thing. Like, they are motivating and driving me both. Like, I took my daughter, who's 13, her best friend, my 10-year-old son to Europe. And I gave him this, we didn't have a typical adventure. Like, I fly seaplanes. I'm a member of the Lake Como Aero Club, the oldest aero club
That's cool.
in the world. I took them. I got them in a Cessna 206. And I'm like, we're going to go fly and, land on the seaplane, jump off, and swim in the lake. Like, I do these things because I know I want to give the kids these experiences, expose them to different cultures, And we went all around Europe for 2 weeks because I have that fear. I'm using it to drive and motivate me. The same as I am my company. Like, I'm constantly challenging these guys. I'm like, guys, the internet in 10 years or less is going to be all VR. Like, you're going to freak out when, people, in my peer group, they can't understand why, these 12, 13-year-old girls are spending, 15 minutes taking a food selfie. And then if it doesn't get enough likes, they're taking it down off Instagram. And I was like, guys, that's the world we live in. Like, that is, that's the world we live in. And the internet's going VR. Like, it's going to be a fully immersive virtual reality environment. Like, talk about freaking out. Like, imagine when the kid puts on the glasses and he's gone for 10 hours.
Right.
And he's like exploring space, maybe going to school in VR, buying virtual product, buying real product in VR and having it shipped to the house. So that, I'm constantly using that fear to kind of read the future and make sure the company is adapting. And you see it in media too. Like,
sure.
Media is rapidly changing.
This has been such a fascinating discussion. And I'm so glad you were able to stop by and talk to us about this, because I think there's so many important lessons that can be gleaned and learned from the book that you've written. It's called Mastering Fear, A Navy SEAL's Guide. The author is former Navy SEAL, Brandon Webb. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Vlad. Appreciate it.